Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Our soul's call. Now, in the science of mind, that is the teaching here at the Center for Spiritual Living, the word soul is used in a very special way, a specialized way. So when we read the word soul in our literature and in our textbook, and especially if you're new to the center, I need to explain that the word soul in our teaching, it refers to something special. It refers to the spiritual law that governs the universe. That's what we mean. Now, you can see that can cause some confusion because it is a different meaning of the word as it is used in contemporary culture outside of the center. You know, in popular culture, the word soul means a whole variety of different things. For example, it can mean that spiritual part of a person that gives them life and endures forever. You know, we can say her soul lived on in her children, for example. Or it could mean a person's emotional or moral nature. Like we could say, you know, when he recited the poem, he was bearing his soul to the class. We could say like that. Or it could mean the creative energy that comes out in a piece of art. Like, for example, the soul of that music was stirring and inspired me. Or it can refer to the embodiment of a specific quality, like the soul of a nation. We could say the soul of the Irish people is reflected in their love of family, etc. It's a different use from science of mind. You know, in the textbook, The Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes, he defines the word soul as, this is good, the mirror of the mind. So your soul then, my soul then, is that part of you, that part of your spiritual being that reflects to you, reflects back to you the form of your thought, the content of your consciousness, the mirror of your mind. That's your soul. So maybe you've heard that phrase, what goes around comes around. That's the work of the soul. Reflecting back. Or remember that phrase from the early days of computer programming, garbage in, garbage out. Yes, that's the work of the soul, reflecting back to you. You know that phrase, garbage in, garbage out, it first appeared in a newspaper in the 50s, 1957, I think, by a computer expert working in the military, William Mellon, and he was explaining in the newspaper article that computers cannot think for themselves, right? And that sloppily programmed inputs produce sloppy results. Computer brains, he was trying to explain, cannot think for themselves, but they must reflect. They must reflect back to the user what is put into them. So if garbage is put into them, garbage comes out of them. That is the work of the soul. In science of mind, that's the idea of soul in science of mind, the mirror of your mind. It's that part of us that can only work with what we give it. It can only carry out the orders given to it. That's the soul. You get it? No? A little louder? Thank you. And if you're online, please speak out to that screen. That's the soul of the mind. It's the spiritual law, and it's faithful, and it's precise, and it carries out instructions. So I needed to start that way, because this month when we talk about our soul, I invite you to think of the collective soul of all of humankind, and now it gets dark. And think about everything that we have been putting into it for centuries and generations. Because what we have been programming into the mirror of our mind, our collective soul, is being reflected back to us generations later. And frankly, there is a lot of mess to clean up from a lot of sloppy programming. This first week of John, the recommended topic for Centers for Spiritual Living Worldwide, we begin this month, the first week, with Pushed by Pain. Now, all around the world, at any given day, the pain that is being reflected back to us from the mirror of our mind is real, visceral, palpable. You might say we are dealing with mindsets in ourselves and in our ancestors that have produced unsupportable ways of life, and we are currently in the process of working through everything that is being reflected back to us, and we're trying to interrupt bad habits with new programming, with new ways of thinking. No more garbage in if we don't want garbage out. This is especially important when we hear about and learn about atrocities that have been committed across generations and nations. You know, from the Nazis and the Holocaust to the brutality of the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia to the genocide of 10 million Congolese in the 1800s. 10 million. The forgotten genocide. To South Africa's apartheid, to the Tulsa Greenwood massacre, and very, very recently to the discovery of 215 bodies of indigenous children, some as young as 6 years old, found buried decades ago in the grounds of a Canadian school, where indigenous children were forced to attend, where just like in our own United States of America, there was an effort to erase indigenous identity. A discovery of this magnitude feels not only unbelievable, but unbearable. And it hurts. It hurts when our collective soul, the mirror of our mind, reveals it, exposes it, and shows the result of a worldview of systemic racism and cultural genocide, a worldview that elevates one group above another. Many people don't want to look at this reflection. They don't want to look at it. They write to me and tell me, "Edward, don't talk about that." Many people want to deny that this is part of our history because of how painful the reflection is and the tendency to not self-identify or have nothing to do with it or diminish it in some way. But it's real. You know, imagine with me if this morning the Press Democrat reported the 215 children's bodies, some as young as 6 years old, were found buried in Annerley High School's grounds with no explanation for how they got there and no accountability for the organization in charge. What kind of programming into the collective soul can permit that? That is a painful push. Each week when we prepare for our message, our organization, Centers for Spiritual Living, sends out notes to help ministers. And the notes for today say this: Suppose, for a moment, we didn't deny or avoid pain, but rather embraced it as an invitation to a higher consciousness, a more profound love, and the opportunity to be even more committed to faith in action. You know, don't be avoidant, I get, is the message. Lean into it. Speaking in Tulsa, Oklahoma, about another tragedy, President Joe Biden became the first United States president to commemorate the 1921 Tulsa race massacre. Here's what he said. "We do ourselves no favors by pretending none of this ever happened or that it doesn't impact us today, because it does still impact us today." The mirror of the mind. We can't pretend our past away. We can't pretend those 215 children back to their families. We can't pretend there's no pain when the reflection is so clear. Actually, indeed, it's when we acknowledge and lean into the depth of what is stirred up in us, the feelings. That is how I believe we get closer to practicing what our teaching declares. And it declares this, that there is nothing to heal, only truth to be revealed. And without the revealing of truth, there can be no healing. So we must ask, what is the truth here that wants to be revealed? What is the consciousness that is being called to shift in us? And how do we today lay the foundation of a world that indeed does work for all and not just for a select few? Oh, that topic today, pushed by pain. It has been said that we are pushed by pain until we are pulled forward by a vision. You know, and when we are pushed by the kind of pain societally that we are experiencing, it seems like we're stumbling forward, dealing with one crisis after another. And on it goes until we let ourselves be raised up and pulled forward by an idea that is so large and so magnificent and so inspiring that it picks us up when we think about it, and it gives us the strength to move and to evolve. And such an idea is called a vision. And we have one. And a vision must be so large that it's not possible to imagine how it will come to pass. Like the vision of the peaceable kingdom in the book of Isaiah. I'll come back to that in a moment. It's also like the vision John described in Revelation when he said he saw a new heaven and a new earth. He saw a new reality in which the divine was dwelling in the community, among the community, bringing heaven and earth together. And he said, and there were no more tears and no more death and neither sorrow nor crying. Here's the line. For the former things will have passed away. The former things? The garbage in. The current things. The way of supremacy. The concepts of control and domination. We don't know how to make that heaven happen. It takes an act of the divine in us and through us, and it takes our faith in the divine as well as our vision of a healthy, loving world. That is what strengthens us and strengthens our trust that beyond the pain that we feel in what is being reflected back to us, beyond that is transformation. And also it requires that we continue to put better programming into our soul computer. Spiritual truth-telling is a good programming practice. Truth-telling. Your truth-telling and restorative justice practices have been a powerful healing agent for transformation across the globe, you know, in Australia with the Aboriginals, in Canada now, and Germany and here in the United States and in the colonized African countries, as well as the Catholicized countries of the Americas. And these practices have allowed the acknowledgement of the pain of the past atrocities and helped communities to heal and recover. The truth will set you free. Wisdom from the 12-step program. You cannot deal with something if you don't acknowledge it's there. So this week, I invite you to join me in two things. First, in your spiritual practice, include our world so we can hold each other, we can love each other, and hold each other in our hearts with compassion as together we walk through the physical and emotional valleys of unjust death. Two, I invite you to learn about, more about, and perhaps you already know, the Truth and Reconciliation projects across the globe. You can read about them all online. Here are some examples. The National Center for Truth and Reconciliation Canada, and on their site they say they're a place of learning and dialogue where the truths of this recent residential school experience will be honored and kept safe for future generations. Or the Truth, Justice, and Reconciliation Commission of the United States of America, it's in the formation process of commissions, and they're starting with three pilot cities, Boston, Philadelphia, and San Francisco, so that they can process and address injustices of the past that simply did not get adequate time, attention, and dignity. Or the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of South Africa, one of the big ones. Mr. Dula Amar, the former Minister of Justice, said this about the commission. It was a necessary exercise to enable South Africans to come to terms with their past on a morally accepted basis and to advance the cause of reconciliation. It's appropriate to do this kind of work as a spiritual being or as not a spiritual being. It's appropriate because it's cleansing work, it's healing work, and it's the act of reprogramming with new wholesomeness into our collective soul for generations to come so that they will have reflect back to them a new heaven and a new earth. And it's uncomfortable work. And there's help for us next week. The recommended topic is lean into the discomfort. Because if humanity is to awaken to its spiritual magnificence and a world that works for everyone, then our discomfort can be our teacher and point to the ways where we aren't there yet. So individually and collectively, then surely we must dive deep into those areas where we are conflict avoidant. Politics, privilege, human rights, sexuality, planetary stewardship, and so on and so on. Because for too long we've pretended it's not part of the spiritual condition. Yes, it is. Why is it okay to talk about self-image and finances and relationship and accommodation and jobs, but not the things that really matter? Because it's painful. Week three, the recommended topic is, what's evolution without love? And that's where we're going to look at, what is societal progress without love? What is political or economic progress when you take love out of it? And we'll look at the evolutionary leap that is possible when we activate the love of the divine in us as we walk in the world. And then week four, the topic is the soul's call to freedom. And that's all about recognizing the divine in ourselves and developing a profound trust in the underlying wholeness and sacredness and innate goodness of being and then live from that and to radiate it so clearly and so beautifully, even in the midst of the painful transformations that must happen as we watch what is being reflected back to us, because society needs more from us than the pursuit of happiness. It needs beings who know their inherent goodness in their bones and who from that innate goodness are strong and wise and forgiving and flexible and courageous and teachable. Because when we program the mirror of our mind from that high state of consciousness, what our soul hears will be reflected back to us in the form of a pathway to a new heaven and a new earth. Now, earlier I mentioned Isaiah, the prophetic vision in the book of Isaiah of a peaceable kingdom, which I love because it points to something that is so unlike what we have now that it boggles the mind, it challenges us, it stretches us to even accept the vision or even to imagine it, while at the same time it is exciting because it touches and resonates with something so innocent in us. Even though we may not know the way to get there yet, it pulls us forward. The words in Isaiah describe a vision of a world in which the wolf shall live with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the lion together, and a little child shall lead them, and the cow and the bear shall graze together, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw just like the ox, while nursing children shall play safely near a snake's den, and young ones will be near a crocodile's den without fear. And here's the line, because they will not hurt or destroy each other on all of my holy mountain, because the earth will be full of the knowledge of holiness as sure as the water covers the sea. Impossible. It's not possible. But oh, so stirring. It speaks to something. For me, the vision of the global vision of Centers for Spiritual Living in our movement is the same thing. It's just another way of describing a peaceable kingdom. It's just another way of singing Paul McCartney's John Lennon's Imagine. It's just another way of, oh, what's that other song, wanting to build the world a home and furnish it with love. We're not the first people to imagine a world free of homelessness, where we don't let our differences separate us, where beauty and aesthetics are important, where spiritual guidance is valued, where oneness is the reality. And we must continue to imagine. We mustn't give up. We must continue to have confidence and trust that we are reprogramming our collective soul with this vision of genuine love for one another, and to trust that it can and it will pull us through a world of differences. We must not give up on imagining a world where there are no more tears and no more racially motivated deaths, and neither sorrow nor crying, because the former will have been displaced and passed away because of the commitment that we have to reseeding consciousness with thoughts so high that it transforms our collective soul. For our spiritual practice today, I invite you to enjoy the words of our global vision. So I invite you to breathe in and to exhale, letting your eyes close. We envision all people, all beings, and all life as expressions of the divine. We see a world in which each person lives in alignment with their highest spiritual principle, emphasizing unity with the divine and connection with each other. We see a world in which individually and collectively we are called to a higher state of consciousness and action. We envision humanity awaking to its spiritual magnificence and discovering the creative power of thought, a world where each person discovers their power and their ability to create an individual life that works within a world that works for all. We envision a world in which we live and grow as one global family that respects and honors the connectedness of all life, a world where kinship with all life prospers and connects. We envision a world where personal responsibility joins with social conscience in every area of the political, corporate, academic, and social sectors. We envision a world where each person has enough food and a home and a sense of belonging, a world of peace and harmony, enfranchisement and justice. We envision a world in which resources are valued, cared for, and grown, and where there is generous and continuous sharing of these resources. We envision a worldwide culture in which forgiveness is the norm. We envision a world that has renewed its emphasis on beauty, nature, and love through the resurgence of creativity, art, and aesthetics. We envision a world that works for all.